Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money on this gorgeous Monday in Park City. This is Larry Warren along with Doug Wells, and we have a show around two different themes this morning. The first is the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, and this is coming 2 weeks before we have a KPCW Community Forum in partnership with Intermountain Park City Medical Center. 2 weeks from today at 6 in the evening, we are going to have a health care reform forum. So this morning we will be getting the briefing underway on Affordable Care Act. We hope to have Matt Sloniker in studio with us. He's with the Utah Health Policy Project, and then follow that up with Mark Blocker, who is in the private health insurance business with National Affinity Services. So we will go in depth this morning on the Affordable Care Act.
And our second theme is going to be talking about, unfortunately, Larry, about scams that have been going around via telephone and social media, and in particular, folks that say they're associated with the IRS. If you get a phone call from an irate IRS agent, they're usually pretty mellow. They may not always be the nicest people, but they're not going to scream at you on the phone. No. And we're going to talk about some of the common scams that are taking place right now. So that'll be our second theme. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a moment. Stay tuned.
Park City Realty Group is proud to support KPCW. Park City Realty Group has provided real estate services to buyers and sellers since 2005. Our team shares local knowledge and insight with clients who value the Park City lifestyle. Knowledge plus hard work equals success. 649-1991 or parkcityrealtygroup.com.
Underwriting on KPCW is supported by Mountain West Bank in Park City, a community bank offering home financing service and guidance. Mountain West Bank is located near Kearns Boulevard next to the movie theater. More information at mountainwestbank.com. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Juniper Landing is proud to support our local radio station, KPCW. Juniper Landing is a new, whole ownership townhome community located at the base of Canyons Resort, adjacent to the Waldorf Astoria Park City, with a model open daily. Our website is juniperlandingparkcity.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money, and we're going to change things up. Instead of starting with our discussion of health care and the Affordable Health Care Act, we're going to move Bill Brunson from the Internal Revenue Service to the top while our other guests arrive. So, Bill Brunson, welcome to the Mountain Money this morning.
Larry, Doug, it's always a pleasure to be in KPCW in Park City.
You know, you were here in person the last time, and you brought along some IRS agents. But since then, we're going to move to a different topic because there are a couple of scams going around that are fairly pervasive, and we wanted to talk to you about them and maybe head people off from getting a phone call they shouldn't be getting. So let's talk a little bit about what's been rolling out by scamsters lately, and the first one is a phone scam in which taxpayers, including recent immigrants, are being called and told they owe money. What's this one about?
Well, you're right. There is a new one out, and there seems to always be a new one coming out whenever something happens or they get a new idea. But this particular one, as you said, is pretty bad. It deals with tax scammers who impersonate IRS agents, and they're trying to get money from you, and they are directing the person that they're calling to buy preloaded debit cards or use a wire transfer of monies. And if the person they're calling starts to bulk, be uncooperative, then the tax scammer gets angry and threatens the victim, in a sense, with, say, police arrest or deportation or suspension of a business or driver's license. And then the caller itself, if you look at your caller ID on your phone, if you've got one of those devices, it will look real, like it's coming from the Internal Revenue Service. And this is another item that they have in their arsenal to fool you in this area. So they're going to want you to pay in an unusual way, saying that you owe, and then if you say no, you don't, then they're going to threaten you. So it's kind of a triple whammy in this sense. Plus, they're going to give you fake common names with bogus badge numbers. They may even have the last four digits of your Social Security number. And it's going to sound in the background like it's coming from a call center. So there's a lot of different things going on here. But the bottom line that your listeners need to know is that the Internal Revenue Service is not going to do business this way. Do we call folks? Yes, we do. But we're not going to threaten the person over the phone. If there is a tax liability, if somebody does owe, we're going to work with them in a business manner, most likely trying to put them in an installment agreement, not some sort of fast pay item that is untraceable. So it's out there, and we don't want people in Utah and Park City having a problem with it.
Now, Bill, I would think if you get a call from what looks like the IRS and it sounds at all suspicious, you should be able to call the IRS's main number and say, hey, I just got a call from so-and-so. Can you connect me with this person? And then you know you're being connected to the IRS. Is that feasible to do?
Doug, you've kind of hit that proverbial nail right on the head. That is one of the things that a taxpayer can do at any time, is call the Internal Revenue Service and ask if there's a balance due on the account and talk to somebody that can bring up the database and look at their record and explain things to them. Now, that individual, when you call the IRS, they're going to validate who you are by various questions, but we're going to be able to discuss with you, the taxpayer, whether you owe or not. And if you do, you know, we'll work with you. But yes, please call the IRS if you feel that if you're being scammed. Call the local police. Call everybody that you can in the world to think about, to let this, you know, item be known so that other people don't have the same problem.
So, IRS agents, when they're looking for money from an errant taxpayer who has forgotten or intentionally not paid up, are they going to be abusive on the phone? I mean, IRS agents are bill collectors too.
That's true, but we have rules and guidelines that we have to follow by. You, the taxpayer, have certain rights. And there is never a need for the Internal Revenue Service to become rude or abusive. The tax code, the laws, is stated clearly, and if there is a liability, then there are certain things that need to be followed that everybody is known and clear about. Now, generally speaking, a person may receive a letter in the mail from the Internal Revenue Service if there's been a change to their account, if there's a balance due, if they owe money, that sort of thing. And there are instructions in that letter as to what they need to do, as to how they need to respond to that correspondence. And then if that happens to be ignored and there are numerous other correspondence in a series that's going to come out to you as a taxpayer, if they are finally ignored, then there may be a call to you in this area saying, I'm calling, my name is such and such, I'm a revenue officer with the Internal Revenue Service, and we need to work out a payment arrangement or some sort of payment on this liability that you have for, say, the current or prior year. Most likely it's going to be 1 or 2 years in the past.
In fact, sometimes those letters will come in. I had the pleasure of getting one probably 10 years ago that said, we think you filed your taxes incorrectly, and we think you're due a refund. But when I first got
I'm waiting for one of those.
You know, the sad thing was, this is when I lived in Colorado, I had an accountant do the taxes. But it had to do with some stock options that weren't accounted for the right way, and I overpaid my taxes. That was pleasant. So that does happen sometimes.
It does happen. You can have an account adjustment notice where we're saying, hey, we've recomputed this particular item, and the error, if you want to call it that, is in your favor, and we will be sending you a check to such and such an address at such and such a time. Or we may alert a taxpayer to a potential credit that we feel that based on the way that they filed the return that they would be eligible for if they did the paperwork on it, such as the earned income tax credit, which is a refundable credit that's for people who work but don't make a lot of money and cause a refund. So there's a lot of different variations on the theme as to why you might get a letter from the Internal Revenue Service, but you're never going to get a call where we're going to threaten you and we're going to tell you we're going to take away your driver's license and put you in jail, and also ask you to pay the tax in a manner is completely out of normalcy, and that would be with one of those wire transfers or prepaid debit cards.
Okay, now this targets mostly immigrants. Is that because they're perceived to be more or less informed about IRS procedure?
That happened to be one of the communities that were being scammed when we were seeing this develop. But that is not the only community that has been affected by this tax scam. It could be your neighbor who's lived there for 25 years and, whatever. So it's just not that particular community. It goes across the board.
And Bill, there's another scam that's taking place, kind of related, just because of a tax write-off, involving fake charities calling people about the typhoon that took place in the Philippines and raising money and pretending to be charities.
And that sort of an item happens to crop up whenever there is some sort of a terrible event, catastrophe. Recently in Arizona, we lost a number of firefighters in central Arizona, and there were tax scams that came after that. So you've got bad people that are going to try to play on your sympathy and get you to send money. Don't send money. Send a check if you're going to pay. But better still, check out the entity that's asking you for this charitable contribution. And you can do that by going to IRS.gov, and we have an exempt organization checklist where you can enter in a little bit of data that's given to you by that business, that entity that's asking for money, by their name and their location to see if they are actually a qualified exempt organization under code section 501c3. So you can check on that yourself, or you can call the Internal Revenue Service and we will run the check for you and say yes, they're a qualified agency, and if you do make a donation, then there's a potential for a tax deduction. Or, no, we currently don't see any record of that organization on file, that sort of thing.
Okay. That's all common sense. Let's move on to a third IRS topic that was in the news about a month ago, which is Treasury Department and IRS announcing that all legal same-sex marriages will be recognized for federal tax purposes. What about in a state like Utah or Arizona where same-sex marriages aren't recognized? Does that matter at all?
You have to look at where the ceremony took place and the type of ceremony, and that's what the information says on IRS.gov. So let's say that you were in a state where the same-sex marriage was recognized and you moved to Arizona or Utah where it currently is not, then you would have that ability to be able to file a federal tax return based on the place of the ceremony and the laws recognizing it. So you have to look at what actually occurred and then from there, apply your facts and circumstances.
Well, Bill, we thank you for joining us this morning. It's about to be your busy season coming up here. So we thank you for sharing a few minutes with us this morning and giving our listeners some warnings of some bad things that are happening out there so that they don't fall victim.
Larry, Doug, it's always a pleasure to be on PCW.
Okay, thanks a lot. And we'll be back to talk about the Affordable Care Act after this.
Tune in to KPCW every Tuesday morning at 9 to hear This Green Earth.
We'll cover environmental issues from local to global, from snowpack to giant squid,
geothermal energy to gray wolves,
and honeybees to sustainable chocolate. Brought to you by Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough,
Republic Services,
Habitat for Humanity's Restore,
and Rocky Mountain Power.
Welcome back to Mountain Money, and we have on the line with us now Matt Sloniker, who's the executive director of the Utah Health Policy Project, and another representative, Matt, Jason Stevenson from Utah Health Policy Project, will be part of our healthcare forum coming up in 2 weeks, sponsored by KPCW and Intermountain Park City Medical Center. And this morning, welcome to you, and tell us a little bit about the Health Policy Project and who it represents and what its mission is.
Well, thank you so much for having me here this morning. I appreciate the opportunity. Utah Health Policy Project is an organization that essentially is looking out for the consumer in buying health care and in making sure that the insurance that they have works for them. Of course, one of the biggest hurdles right now for people is that they may not have insurance. Obviously, this impacts the low-income population more than it does those with higher incomes. So really, what our mission comes down to is number one, getting folks enrolled in insurance, and number two, making sure that insurance is useful.
And we see nothing but headlines about how healthcare.gov is not working very well. What have you run into in your business of helping people enroll?
Yeah, in fact, just this morning I had a conversation with our director of Take Care Utah, which is one of Utah's lead navigator organizations, about this. And yeah, it's been a challenge, and I think you just pinpointed where the challenge comes from, and that really is the healthcare.gov website. It just takes so much time and so much anguish to go through the process of waiting to see it, to make sure you can get through. Some people don't. They try back the next day and they still don't get in. And there is some frustration there. But I'm hopeful. I'm kind of an eternal optimist that in the next couple weeks we'll see .gov be more cooperative. And I think really we'll see a pretty big push at that point. But I don't think we'll see the biggest push to get enrolled through these new options under the Affordable Care Act until we get a little closer to some deadlines. The first deadline is December 15th. That's the deadline to get a plan so that you can have access to insurance and health care on January 1st, 2014. I think there's going to be a big push on the 15th, the 14th, kind of like Black Friday, kind of like the day before tax day, where people go and get enrolled before they miss out on an opportunity. And I think the next big date after that is really going to be March 31st. And that's the date where folks, if they don't buy insurance, are subject to the shared responsibility payments. So I think that, we're kind of waiting around. We're doing as much help as we can for folks that are interested. But frankly, it's hard to incent interest when you're buying a product or you're signing up for a product that you don't receive for a month or two down the road.
So, Matt, is there any disadvantage if somebody would like to have coverage January 1st? You mentioned the deadline is December 15th to go to healthcare.gov and sign up. Is there any disadvantage to signing up now? I would imagine if you change your mind, you can cancel. There's probably a cancel deadline as well.
Yeah, you certainly can sign up now. There's no disadvantage. In fact, I would encourage all folks that are interested in getting one of these opportunities for health care insurance to do it today or to do it as soon as possible. I think we'd want to avoid the rush, and if you do change your mind, there's always options to adjust what you've committed to.
So, Matt, in my case, I'm very fortunate. The company I work for has a really nice health care package. But I know a lot of folks do not have access to it. They may have health insurance offered through their employer. Maybe they work in retail. I think retail and maybe small restaurants are known for not being able to afford to offer their employees really nice healthcare packages. Are there people that currently are likely covered by employers that might still, even though they have insurance, might save money, might be better off by going to healthcare.gov?
There are. And in fact, the way the law works is that if you have employer-sponsored coverage, generally you aren't eligible, or as the overarching rule, you're not eligible for the marketplace-based plans. But there is an exception, and that is if your plan is not affordable, then you're allowed to go ahead and seek a more affordable option on healthcare.gov through the marketplace.
And is there a rule of thumb it has to be 15% less expensive for you, or is, as long as it's less expensive, you can switch?
It's got to be a certain amount less expensive, and that depends on a lot of factors. But generally speaking, in order to get that access, you do have a burden of proof in showing that the costs of the employer plan are not affordable.
Boy, Matt, just in the brief conversation we've had so far, mm-hmm. you can clearly see how complicated this whole issue is. So let's go back to the basics. Let's start the conversation at the beginning and just talk about Affordable Care Act, what it's designed to do, provide health insurance for every American regardless of pre-existing conditions and affordability on the part of the individual. The goal is to get everybody covered for medical issues.
Yeah, that's really it. I think, once again, you sort of nailed it there. The Affordable Care Act essentially was an endeavor to, much like what's known as Romney Care in Massachusetts, to get everyone covered. It didn't do as much to control costs. I think the first goal through health care reform, it was really to get everyone covered, because once you have everybody in, you have a much better risk pool, and you have a situation where you don't have a lot of inefficiencies or folks that aren't insured going into an emergency room in the improper setting, costing a lot of money, having those types of costs be paid along to premium payers. And really, Affordable Care Act was meant to, one, get folks insurance, and then, two, to make the system more efficient, having more people in the system.
And in order to make that work, it has to be, according to the law, mandatory, meaning that younger people who don't have many health issues or any, unless they get in a ski wreck or something, mm-hmm.
I hear can be expensive.
Which, having had a son who broke a shoulder to the tune of $22,000, yes. But by and large, what happens is by forcing everyone to be insured, the younger, healthier people then, in a way, subsidize the older, unhealthier people.
Yeah, that's really the idea. And, you know, there was a lot of arguments back and forth about the mandate among the parties and of folks kind of within the same party. But the truth be known, if you look to the Massachusetts experiment, like I kind of hinted at a little bit earlier, most of the young people especially didn't enroll until a few days before they were going to be hit with a shared responsibility penalty, or what is better known as the fee you'd have to pay if you don't have insurance, if you don't get insurance. So I think the mandate is a big piece of it, making sure that everybody is covered, and that when, you know, young people are only young for a certain amount of time, and eventually they become older and more costly. So it's a system where we kind of share in the risk.
It's kind of like the Social Security entitlement. The youngsters today are supporting the old folks, and eventually they'll be the old folks, and they'll have their kids supporting them.
It's funny you mention that, Larry, because that was the point I was going to make. Is it reminds me of the argument my father gave me when I was paying Social Security. I've been working since I was 12, And, you know, they take Social Security out of your paycheck when you're 12 years old. And that was my father's argument, and it didn't seem so fair to me at the time. But now this whole health care thing does seem fair to me because I'm on the other end of the equation. And on that topic, you know, the nice thing about Social Security is it was like 7%, and I think at the time it was closer to 5% of your pay, so it wasn't that painful. What does it cost a young person, like a 25-year-old single male in good health? What is that monthly cost for insurance for somebody like that?
You know, it kind of depends again, but I'll give kind of a quick example. Essentially, there's two parts of it. One, the cost of the insurance plan, the policy, and there's three grades of policies, bronze, silver, and gold. And essentially, you can select whatever policy you want. Obviously, bronze is going to be cheaper and have less benefit. The second piece is the tax subsidies. So the credits you'll receive from the federal government that can go towards your health care costs that were set up by the Affordable Care Act. So if it kind of depends on where your income is, but generally speaking, a young person in good health with a bronze plan won't have a hard time finding a plan for around $100 a month, and that isn't bad. I have seen cheaper as well, but compared to the cost that you'd face on the individual market now, I think those costs are pretty appealing.
Yeah, you know, that was my case. I talked earlier about, you know, people that don't have they're offered insurance through their employer, but it's not a really good plan. You know, when I first started my career and I was working in a position where I had health care, I had to pay, it seemed like at the time, a lot of money for my health care, where really I was paying 100% of the cost anyways. So having the opportunity to get a decent plan that you know is going to offer reasonable coverage when you need it for the things that could be expensive for $100 a month, it to me, that falls into the realm of reason.
Yeah, it really is. And I pay $100, and that's including a kind of a mid-range subsidy. If you were just to look at the plan, it'd be more like $150, $160. But that's still, pretty reasonable in the grand scheme of things.
How about somebody older? Let's say, you know, somebody that's 40 with a family of four, you know, husband, wife about the same age, two kids, 10, 12, something like that. What does a plan like that cost a family?
Right, you know, it gets harder to calculate because you just don't know, all the factors related to income and so forth. But there are calculators on the internet that you can use. Kaiser has a great calculator that folks can go to just to see, generally speaking, what they'd have to pay. But I've seen plans come in for a family of four from around $200 to $300 for bronze level. So, you know, it isn't much more, frankly.
You know, Matt, I look at the healthcare.gov website and hear about it and all its problems, and President Obama getting to the point where after he pledged that no one would lose their current health insurance, people did, and now he's kind of reversed on that and delayed enrollment. I guess what I'm trying to say is healthcare is just ungodly complicated to begin with, and now you're trying to enroll 300 million Americans in the span of a couple of months. How do you see this rolling out? I mean, the initial weeks of the rollout are just chaos and disaster for the president, and how do you see this all a year from now?
You know, I actually, once again, kind of the eternal optimist, I think it will get worked out. I think the Affordable Care Act has good bones. I think what we're experiencing here are glitches. A lot of parallels to the Medicaid Part D rollout, where there was a lot of misinformation, a lot of problems with getting it rolled out, but now we've got Medicare Part D program that folks seem to be pretty happy with, generally speaking, and it helps a lot of seniors.
And you know, I think we should be patient, give some time, you know, website rollouts, especially when they do impact very large populations, are tough. And I think once we get some of the bugs worked out, I think things will start to fall in place. You know, right now I think I saw some numbers, might only be as few as a few hundred thousand folks that have enrolled nationwide, but that is a few hundred thousand folks, and that is despite some of the glitches that we've seen. You know, on the plan, not keep being able to keep your plan. You know, I think that question we'll also think about a little bit deeply here in the next few months too. And I think we've heard it from some folks that are close to this issue. But frankly, a lot of those plans that people really want to keep, if they knew more about them, they may not want the plans anymore. There's a reason why they weren't permitted by the Affordable Care Act. It's because they don't have the benefits that really are robust enough to cover a family. So I'm optimistic. I think we all kind of have to just grin and bear it here and hope for the best. But our organization is continuing to enroll people, and when we can't use the website, we use paper documents, which they allow, and that's a good thing.
Now, looking, you know, the name of your group is Health Policy Project, so you clearly are looking at the politics of this too, and. Mm-hmm. And do you see the Affordable Care Act surviving? I mean, it barely passed, and it is still under vigorous Republican attack, and there's an election next year. So, you know, is this here forever?
You know, I think that the majority of the Affordable Care Act is going to stick around for the long term. I think the principles in the Affordable Care Act are principles that a lot of other countries have implemented and they've had some success with. In the United States, we have a little bit different setup, and we waited a little bit longer to implement major reform, so we're facing more difficulty. But I think it goes back to, you know, a lot of folks don't like Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. When you talk about any one of its constituent parts, they seem to like it. You know, you mentioned the pre-existing condition piece and the disallowance of plans from prohibiting people with pre-existing conditions to buy insurance. It's hard to find somebody that is in favor of allowing insurance plans to do that, and you know, kids being able to keep their insurance up to the age of 26. I think there's a lot of support for a lot of the constituent parts of the Affordable Care Act, but the rollout's been ugly. I think as a whole, there's been some troubles, but I think. In the end, you know, most of the principles will prevail, and we'll see those for the long term in place in this country.
Yeah, Larry, I think your question's a good one, and it's an important one. Will Obamacare last? And I don't know if Obamacare itself will last, but I think once you offer the nation health insurance, it's one of those things that I think people are going to hold on to pretty tightly, and there's going to be some form of it. It may evolve. You know, the current system we had last year is broke, right? When you look at it's a topic most small business owners talk about, the cost of healthcare
sure.
insurance. As a father of two children and a member of a household with four people, it's a topic we're talking about quite often. And I think in some form or another, the ability to get insurance relatively affordably, I think, is going to be here with us. And I think we'll tweak it, and over time it'll get better. But, you know, Medicare is still subject to a fair amount of debate. I think most people like it, but it is subject to debate. Medicaid is. Social Security is. You and I were talking about that just before the show. But I do think that it's here with us, and it'll tweak, and over time it'll get better, and we'll work out some of the kinks.
Matt, give us an action plan. Okay, so you've heard this discussion. You've read about it in the papers, and you've heard about it endlessly on TV. Now the time is here. What's the action plan? What do I, as an individual or a young seasonal worker in Park City just arriving in town, need to do?
Yeah, I think first thing you should do is hop on healthcare.gov. If that's not working, go to another parallel site like Kaiser or some of the other big national health groups. They have sites that will help you figure out how to navigate this world. But I think to make all efforts to get enrolled if you aren't, I think this is the time to do it. I think if you already have insurance, I think you're in a good place, and I think it's wise to keep that insurance. You may want to look to see if your employer plan is affordable, if there's better options with the Affordable Care Act. But essentially, just get going with trying to figure out what are your options. This is the time to do it. You don't want to do it down the road. You don't want to do it March 30th before the mandates kick in, and we have everybody rushing back to try to get enrolled. So
What about, you know, Larry mentioned seasonal workers, and we have a fair number of seasonal workers that come from outside of the United States. Mm-hmm. Probably a naive question, but I don't know the answer. Do you need to be a U.S. citizen in order to sign up on healthcare.gov?
Well, that's a little bit more complicated. The Affordable Care Act does not cover undocumented immigrants, so there's no options for undocumented. If you are a legal permanent resident, there are some options. Generally, you're eligible for the exchange, but you may also be eligible for Medicaid as well, depending on how long you've been in the United States. So unfortunately, a lot of the undocumented workers would have to either have employer-based coverage or seek out care sort of in the individual arena. So,
you know, another question in this endlessly confusing topic. States were offered the option of having a federal health insurance exchange where the states would operate a federal health insurance exchange. And, I guess states could have their own state health insurance exchange. And if not, the federal government would be the health insurance exchange. In Utah, we opted not to run our own program. Is that right? And does that make anything easier or more complicated?
Well, I think what we've seen is in Utah, it's a little bit different situation. We do run our small business exchange. The feds let us keep that, but the feds do run the individual marketplace, which is the one that the healthcare.gov marketplace. But I think the lessons learned maybe is that states that had state exchanges had maybe more success. There's been a couple states that have had a tough time with their state-based individual marketplaces, but I think the big states, California and New York specifically, they're talking about having a lot of success in enrolling thousands, hundreds of thousands of people where there has been more difficulty in the federal counterpart. So I think going forward, it may behoove Utah to really explore thinking about transferring over to a state-based individual marketplace at some point. Keeps kind of, you tailor it for Utah a little bit more. You can make sure that it's what we really need here. And I think that's probably going to be on the table in the next several years, is bringing it back, bringing that exchange or that marketplace within state control.
Okay, Matt, thanks for joining us this morning. And a reminder, Jason Stevenson from your office, the education director, will be up in Park City in 2 weeks for the KPCW Intermountain Healthcare Forum, a community forum on healthcare reform. That'll be 2 weeks Monday evening, December 2nd at the Santee Auditorium. And you'll hear more about that in the weeks to come. Thanks for joining us this morning. And we're going to continue the healthcare conversation with Mark Blocker, who's managing partner of National Affinity Services, to talk about the services private insurers can provide. So we will be back to continue the discussion after this.
This is Christian Bohr with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Chamber Bureau members enjoy a wide array of benefits, including instant credibility, weekly newsletters with relevant information, educational seminars, webinars, and much more. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
Hi, I'm Heidi Gatch of Prudential Utah Real Estate. KPCW is our community voice, and that's why I enthusiastically support it. I've offered real estate services in Park City and Deer Valley through Prudential Utah Real Estate since 1992. I can be reached at 640-0892 or at HeidiGatch.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. We have in studio with us Mark Blocker. He's the managing partner of National Affinity Services, which is private health insurance. We previously were talking with the executive director of Utah Health Policy about the national program. Now we're going to talk about private insurance that's available to us. So, Mark, welcome to the program. And tell us, is the Health Care Reform Act, is that something that's also going to help private insurers, or do you see that as being competitive to the private insurance business?
Well, I think it's all going to help and be competitive. The question is, where we go next year. And, of course, it's been all over the papers and all over the press over the weekend. So what we're urging people to do is more of a practical approach, which is how can we help you save money today and next year, and what should you really be doing with your health care cost?
Well, let's talk about that because I think people are acutely interested in that topic.
Right. So we're urging people, as was said earlier in the program, to take action now. And that action takes different forms. For those that don't have a pre-existing condition and they don't need guarantee issue, we're urging them to go ahead and shop now. They can go to healthcare.gov or they can go on to the private exchanges that we've set up or that other companies have set up and shop for their healthcare online. We know that the pricing for the December 1 effective dates, which gives us a couple weeks, is probably going to be less expensive with traditional plans. So we think it's a great thing to do right now is look at those pricing comparisons and look at what's available through healthcare.gov and then make an informed decision.
So as I understand it, pre-existing conditions are now a thing of the past, right? That you can't be excluded for pre-existing conditions.
Correct.
And another major issue used to be the lifetime limit that, let's say somebody has cancer, some policies had $1 million, $2 million lifetime limits, which unfortunately can bankrupt you if you're unfortunate and get an expensive cancer to treat. Are people able to comparison shop now and say, you know, this plan here is very similar to the bronze plan that Matt was talking about earlier?
Well, there's two levels of shopping. The first level of shopping is those that don't have pre-existing conditions that have an opportunity to save money by shopping for making a December 1 effective date. Select Health, Blue Cross, a number of the carriers here in Utah are offering to guarantee those rates through December 2014. And so those rates are more competitive than the traditional metal plans that we're rolling out for January 1. And that includes both the public exchange and the private medical plans that are being offered. Because you have to understand that not only can you get through healthcare.gov the metal plans that have the guarantee issue, but you can also go to the private side of the market and get those plans as well directly with the insurance companies or through, like, the Park City Chamber's website.
Now, in the private insurance market, how many in Utah plans are there? Are there dozens, hundreds to choose from, or are there two or three or four?
Well, there's seven basic companies that operate effectively in the Utah market space, and all of them have different plans available depending on the time of the year. So the plans that they offer for December 1 are going to be different than the plan designs being offered effective January 1. So everybody will be in a level playing field with guarantee issue January 1, whether you go through healthcare.gov or go to the private industry.
So if I'm hearing your point right, my statement earlier was a little incorrect where I said pre-existing conditions is a thing of the past. It will be January 1. So if you've got a clean bill of health now, you might actually save money because you're not going into this pool where everybody, pre-existing conditions or not, are being priced. You can get priced at a lower rate before the first of the year.
Right. That's correct. In fact, we're nationally licensed, and we're also certified in the federal exchange as well as a number of the state exchanges. And we're finding throughout the country that the rates coming up January 1 are 30 to 50% more. We've obviously heard the press where we've heard stories where it's 100% more. So As a practical application, we're urging people to shop now with real rates. We've kind of gotten away from playing with the subsidy calculators, and we're urging people to find out what their real subsidy is so they're dealing with real numbers, because we're getting close to decision time of what they should do with their health care.
Well, it's now mid-November. Are you saying you should lock in a rate by the 1st of December if you don't have a particularly serious medical issues?
I would. I definitely would.
That just gives you 2 weeks.
It gives you 2 weeks. That's correct.
Which is probably enough time if you start now.
Well, you can go on, again, on the Park City Chamber Bureau's website, shop plans, select a plan, and enroll online.
And
so it's a very simple process.
Day?
You can do that today.
And you're locked in, you're guaranteed that.
And as soon as you're approved by the underwriter, then you're guaranteed your rates by most of the carriers here in the state till December 2014. We've actually seen savings of a couple hundred dollars a month for some of our clients, and that adds up to a couple thousand dollars of savings.
Well, yeah, and then multiply that across the nation or even Park
several
City.
Employees,
and,
several employees at
now,
one
Now, this
place.
Is going to obviously go away on December 2nd, so this shopping opportunity disappears.
Do you need to be approved by the underwriter before December 1st?
Yes.
You do.
You
okay,
definitely
so time
do.
Is, Larry, you're right. There is a sense of urgency. You probably need to do it this week at the earlier this week.
Well, yeah, Thanksgiving coming up next week, so.
That's true.
Time is ticking away.
What about the subsidies? If you qualify for a subsidy and you purchase a private plan, do you still get the tax credit?
No, you need to go and purchase through healthcare.gov to get a subsidy, okay. And you have to purchase a silver plan.
And what about, you know, I know it's subject to a lot of debate and argument right now, the penalties for not having health care insurance. What if somebody does get to the first of the year, doesn't have insurance, and they choose not to, to get health insurance, that's they're allowed to do that, but they're going to pay a penalty. What penalty are they going to pay next
well,
year?
Well, most of the consumers out there that we've talked to think it's a $95 penalty, and it's a little misleading. It's $95 or 1% of their family's income, which can be a significant dollar amount. And then that ratchets up to 2% in 2015 and 2.5% of your income the following year. So it does start to have an impact.
And even that flat rate goes up to almost $700 in 2016
right.
per adult.
Right. So yeah. It's a lot of money.
It gets expensive quickly.
So if you're protesting as a matter of principle, you're still going to be paying.
Right.
It's pay me now or pay me later when it comes to health insurance. Okay, so one of the action plans you would suggest is that you shop immediately and nail something down in the next 2 weeks. What else should people be having on their radar by the end of the year?
Well, when they're shopping, they shouldn't just look at price. They need to make sure their physicians are in their network, in the plans network. So that's going to become one of the issues in 2014. We've heard lately that hundreds and hundreds of physicians are getting taken out of Medicare by UnitedHealthcare most recently. So we think that the some of the networks may become more restrictive in terms of choice of physicians and hospitals. And so we urge our customers before they buy to make sure that their physician or their provider is in their network.
And is that going to all be linked into the shopping sites online?
The online site that we have where people can shop for their coverage also has a way for them to click a button and find out if their physician's in the network.
Yeah, and I think that's important because, for most of our adult lives, we've been able to pick a plan that covers a doctor that we might want to have in our – be our primary doc and be able to visit. And Mark, you brought in with you a newspaper clipping that talks about UnitedHealthcare. The title's UnitedHealthcare calls, as in CHOPS, doctors from plan. And is that something that's pretty widespread taking place?
We haven't seen a lot of it. We've heard indications that some of the carriers are, in fact, offering more limited networks to try to drive down savings to offset the adverse selection they'll pick up through guarantee issue and the inability to underwrite. So we feel that some of the network choices may be smaller in the publicly provided plans as opposed to the private insurers' plans.
You know, one of the things, we're a business show, and one of the things Larry and I talk to entrepreneurs and company leaders about is through their history, some of the various pivots they've had to make. And usually that's in hindsight, right? They tell us about the pivots that they've made in the past and how it's led to them being successful or overcoming challenges. Mark, in your future, I see a pivot, right? January 1st is going to be a very different world for you than it is today. How are you thinking about that?
Well, our world hasn't really changed too much. We've been marching pretty straightforward, setting up shopping tools for our clients. Everyone's rates are the same, but what we provide the consumer is the ability to look at numerous plans, drill down, look at detailed benefits. They really understand what they're paying for, and we find a lot of people don't know what they've got. So that's pivotable. The other thing that's going to happen is we kick the can down the road and people keep their plans till December 2014, we're going to see another resurgence of people shopping again next fall. It's going to be very heavy because a lot of people have opted to stay where they are and keep their plan, which some of the carriers have offered to do. Particularly true in the large case market, where we see very little interest in talking about health care reform with large companies. A lot of them want to wait till the spring or till they have to look at it hard again.
Okay, well, thanks very much for joining us. Mark Blocker has continued our health care reform discussion. He is managing partner of National Affinity Services, and your information is available on the Park City Chambers website.
That's true. In fact, we're having a workshop for people that want to attend at 8:30 at the Peaks Hotel here in Park City this Wednesday. So if someone wants to attend, please stop by.
Okay, very fine. Thanks for joining us, and we will be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Hi, this is Steve Roney with Prudential Utah Real Estate, a proud supporter of KPCW. With more than 100 sales associates and 14 gallery or ski-in offices in Park City, Prudential Utah can help you with your residential or commercial real estate needs. More information at pru-utah.com or with the Prudential Utah mobile search app.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com. Park City Nursery. For 30 years, we know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. VaultHomeLoans.com. Purchase and refinance mortgages. Conventional FHA and VA. 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
And as we wrap up Mountain Money for this morning, again, a reminder, on December 2nd, KPCW presents a community forum in partnership with Park City Medical Center. December 2nd, we're going to start with a social at 5 p.m. and then a program at 6 that we will also broadcast. That'll be at the Jim Santee Auditorium. And a landmark day, Doug. You watch the market like a hawk. And what's happening today?
Yeah, it is a landmark day, and you know it doesn't follow that far away from a couple weeks ago where people were very nervous about the market with the government shutdown, the looming potential default of U.S. debt. But Larry, as we speak, the Dow for the first time has crossed 16,000, and the S&P 500 earlier today had crossed 1,800, just a smidge below that. And I think it does speak to the importance of having a long-term strategy and sticking to it. Because, boy, 4 or 5 weeks ago, just before you went to France on vacation, things looked pretty dire. And now we're at a very different vantage point. And you don't want to be bouncing around with your investments based on what the headlines are that day.
Yeah. So, and as you've said many times, you can't time the market. You can't say now's the time. You better get out, or now's the time.
You probably time it about half the time. Half the time you're going to be right, but that can be extremely costly. So try to avoid doing
that. Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to remind everyone: This Green Earth is here tomorrow, and they'll be talking about air quality and associated health impacts. And then Chris and Nell will be talking about effects on children of PM 2.5, those little particulate matters in the air. And Doug, next week we have a guest who's a favorite of yours on cable TV.
Yes, Bar Rescue, John Taffer, and I probably shouldn't say this on the air, but my 11-year-old and I like to watch that show, so she'll be glad to hear John's going to be on.
It's a pretty interesting show. I've seen it a few times, and we'll have John Taffer, the star of that show, on the air with us live next week. Thanks for joining us. I want to thank our great sponsors, Park City Realty Group, Mountain West Bank, Iron Mountain Group, Park City Chamber, Prudential Real Estate and San Francisco Design. This is KPCW Park City.